I'm going to be a bit bold like the people who went before me. I'm going to read two. I'm going to read my favorite poem, and then I'm going to read a poem about my daughter. So this one is called Her Kind, and it's by Anne Sexton, who's an American poet who lived in kind of the 50s. Her Kind. I have gone out a possessed witch, haunting the black air, braver at night. Dreaming evil, I have done my hitch over the plain houses, light by light. Lonely thing, 12-fingered, out of mind. A woman like that is not a woman, quite. I have been her kind. I have found the warm caves in the woods, filled them with skillets, carvings, shells, closet silks, innumerable goods, fixed suppers for worms and elves. Whining, rearranging the disaligned. A woman like that is misunderstood. I have been her kind. I have driven in your cart, driver, waved my nude arms at villages going by, learning the last bright root, survivor, where your flames still bite my thigh, and my ribs crack where your wheels wind. A woman like that is not ashamed to die. I have been her kind. Just so I can email her tomorrow and tell her that I read out one of her poems. This is a poem by my daughter, Sasha, and it's called For My Mom. Gosh. I watch my mother bake, curious, how she spreads the flour across a slab of marble, dusting lightly. Her whitening knuckles know this, like history, like genetics. And I can only marvel at the magic her hands mold, this time caressing, this time punching into the rising dough, and knowing just when is enough to stop. Now, to still have life in it to grow into something complete. Gestating under a damp tea towel stained with last year's jam, the dough sits like I sat in my mother, cradled in her red and white check belly, her yeast rising, fermenting me into something complete. I sit and wait, occasionally peering under the gingham habit that is its womb, spying on our creation with bones of dough too soft still to touch. She teaches me how long to wait till it's good to bake, and how to grease the burnt black bread tin, so that when it's ready, we can delicately lift the newborn loaf from its home without hurting it. Tomorrow, my mom makes another loaf of bread, and I stand back. It is time for my sister to learn.
And next up is Colin Scully, please.
Coming up here all night. This one I heard in the Springs Literary Festival in the Metropole Hotel. It was one of John O'Neill's sessions, poetry film. It was a poetry film of the works of Philip Larkin. So it was the first poem I heard when I came into the session that day, and I just thought it was a really nice poem and a really beautiful poem. And this was the subject of the poem is work, something that all of us, or most of us, spend a huge proportion of our lives doing, and yet there's very little, as far as I can see, written in terms of poems about work, or literature about work, even though we spend a lot of our lives doing it. So this is it. It's called Toes Revisited. Walking around in the park should feel better than work. The lake, the sunshine, the grass to lie on. Blurred playground noises, beyond black stocking nurses. Not a bad place to be, yet it doesn't suit me. Being one of the men, you meet of an afternoon, palsied old step tapers, hair eyed clerks with the jitters, waxed flesh, outpatients, still vague from accidents, and characters in long coats deep in the litter baskets, all dodging the toad walk. fucking stupid or weak. Think of being them, hearing the hours chime, watching the bread delivered, the sun by clouds covered, the children going home. Think of being them, turning over their failures by some bed of abuse. Nowhere to go but indoors, not friends but empty chairs. No, give me my entree. My low-fared secretary. My, shall I keep the calling, sir? What else can I answer? When the lights come on at 4, at the end of another year, give me your arm, old toad. Help me down Cemetery Road.
Fantastic stuff. Next up is Joel Sweeney, please.
Two very short poems. They're poems of the heart rather than the head, and they should put you all to sleep. First by Robert Frost. Stopping by woods on a snowy evening. Whose woods these are, I think I know. His house is in the village, though. He will not see me stopping here to watch his woods fill up with snow. The little horse must think it queer to stop at a farmhouse near, between the woods and frozen lake, the darkest evening of the year. He gives his harness bells a shake to ask if there is some mistake. The only other sound is the sweep of easy wind and down the lake. The woods are lovely, dark and deep. Promises to keep, and miles to go before I sleep, and miles to go before I sleep. Are you asleep yet? This will do it.
Wake us up, Jerry.
No, this will put you into an even deeper sleep. It's by Walter Delamere, and it's called Night. Softly along the road of evening, in a twilight dim with rose, wrinkled with age and drenched with dew, old Nod the shepherd goes. His drowsy flock streams on before him, their fleeces charged with gold, to where the sun's last beam leans low on Nod the shepherd's home. The hedge is quick and green with briar, from their sand the conies creep, and all the birds that fly in heaven flock singing home to sleep. His lambs outnumber a noon's roses yet, when night shadows fall his blind old sheepdog slumbers soon, misses not one of all. His are the quiet steeps of dreams, waters of no more pain. His ram's bell rings, he's an arch of stars. Rest, rest, and rest again. Good night.
Thanks, Joel. Rosalind Gloopy.
I brought this big, fat book, which I actually, well, I don't remember really if I stole it or if I bought it from the school in America I went in. It was my school book there. The heaviest school book I ever owned, but a very good book. It contained the British literature, and I picked a poem from Thomas Hardy, who lived from 1840 to 1928, and this poem was written or published, I assume, in 1902, and it's still so accurate for nowadays that I believe it's worth to be heard. The man he killed. Had he and I but met by some old ancient inn, we should have sat us down to wet right many a nipperkin. But ranged as infantry and staring face to face, I shot at him as he at me, and killed him in his place.
I shot him dead because he was my foe. Just so. My foe, of course, he was. That's clear enough. Although he thought he'd list, perhaps, offhand, like, just as I was out of work. Had told his traps. No other reason why. Yes, quaint and curious war is. You shoot a fellow down. You treat, if met, where any bar is, or help to half a crown.
Thanks very much, that was fantastic. Next up, we have a Deirdre O'Connor.
This poem is by a guy called Brandon DeShazer, and he's from the Lone Star State of Texas. And untitled. A soft glow, yet wild in radiance, yet wild in radiance, comes through this eternal endless fog to me. Magnetized up the senses so that even the walls know of her presence. Truly a universe unraveling in her eyes, only reflecting of the occasion, yet while absorbing all beauty around her, only to give it new life in the air of and so blessed to share this gratitude with her. Inside she turns a perfect violence, a conscious chaos in perfect harmony to give and take of what will be life and truth. For the wisdom bestowed of fallen stardust, comforts the beast, lest its forgotten her scorn remains well intact. Though to beg a secret shown, and to stand in awe of a celestial goddess, know still yet in your bones that worlds of stars are yet to be born. So sit in silence for an eternity, in this moment, and know what ancient electric spell you have witnessed. Shake you from your stupor and wait, for life has just begun.
Next up is Matt Mooney, please.
I owe the first poem to a nice, a great night in the Everyman Theatre, Philip Larkin night. The Trees by Philip Larkin. The trees are coming into leaf like something almost being said. The recent buds relax and spread. Their greenness is the kind of grief. Is it that they are born again and we grow old? No, they die too. Their yearly trick of looking new is written down in rings of grain. Yet still the unresting castles thresh in full-grown thickness every May. Last year is dead, they seem to say. Begin afresh, afresh, afresh. The second poem is by Noel Monaghan. Discovered at the Forge and Garth Poetry Festival recently. And this poem is called Gathering Mushrooms from its collection, Curve of the Moon. We slipped into Tully's field, the gates rattled, sheep scattered, cows stood our ground as we strolled around in the hope of finding mushrooms. You're blind as bats, Mad Riley said. I can see them sleeping on their bedstraw, hear them whispering in their dreams. Or black tum quenching the stars in the grass, their frail pink gills breathing a final tune. Nightfall, the road lit up with the sparks of mushrooms beaming from bucket in hand, like pilgrims returning from the Holy Land. Tawnines laden, beads dangling in the dark, a dimmer from lost fields I long to find, hidden somewhere in the back of my mind.
Alright.
One Little One from the inimitable Anthony Cronin. Smiles. In the lesser exchanges of life, women smile more than men. We are all anxious to seem attractive, but men can get away would the darkly silent has to turn faintly rooting better. Men, after all, are usually the boss. But also, woman, not smiling is a threat to the stability of the universe. To the peace and prosperity of the country. To some anxious man's self-esteem. So they have to smile, simply to keep things going.
Thank you, Matt. And next up we'll have Paul Casey.
Yeah, tiny mushrooms could talk. Okay. You could probably tell I'm on a lower intermediate Irish course at the moment. But I can't seem to stay away from the bones of Shauna O'Donnell, who's not really known in English yet. And I'm probably boasting now, but I'm lucky to be in possession of an illegal copy of his translations, you know, which his publisher has banned from being published. So it's a short poem, I'll give you the translation, and I have one other. Uda. She durt and turisha, so, the scriva fuckoga, me gaelga, as a hull ega. Ta hashe, a eha, a ega moch, is mea a isha a moch, is dera leenta, a turiach tquelana. Anson fur bas to right, dirach is the ega. The English translation by Delante. Author. This particular author said he'd not compose a word until he was top-notch in Irish. He spent his youth, middle age, right to the end of his days, climbing Mount Irish. Just as he made the top, he copped it. This poem was written a couple of years ago by Anna Maria Gross-Serrano, who's twice a guest poet here, and it's called A Veil, and it has a refrain, and so when I give the nod, you all have to, say,
O Veil,
okay? O Veil. For the O Veil audience in Cork, the regulars and the irregulars. What is the word, if not its mouth, open, closed, stretched first, the lips, teeth, tongue, palate, ridge, quintet, and the little squiggly bit dangling at the back of your throat, good for Spanish words like jongibre, and even simple English words like hello, how are you, air funneling from lungs through larynx to fill the mouth, all those things you want to say. The beauty of the word slithering into consciousness from nada into dada, embryonic fission, splitting morph and MA, then eem and eem, then merging into multi-syllable syllababble, tumbling with its own momentum towards intelligible speech. Without that struggle to be heard, how would we reveal the workings of the psyche, the splintered contradiction of unspoken word, synaptic between thought and articulation, agglutinating silence with the spectre of a sound, a hum, a murmur, gurgle, giggle, though, cough, a plosive genie puffed into the air with fricatives confused around it, shitting, flipping, fet, expletives, flustering the ah, the ooh, the frightened e of vowels voiced. Glottic, gloopy, startled by the jams and crashes, the trafficking of letters, in the buccal cavity, the word once learned muddles for a medley of vibrations, plucks the chords that build up to the quiet word, the quick word, the good word, the weasel word wrestling with a fuckle fear. Palabrota on parole, parola, chiave for that crossword and the buzzword, in other words, ikiri ghiacci di parole, a magic word, monjus and a fuckle derenach, that takes the words right out of your mouth. Even the single word can sing when it's pipistrello, suivnish, piachka. And the words you give when you give your word, parole d'honneur, is especially melodious to the ear. Not like the single word, as in, I want a word with you. There's no melody in that one. It's just an understatement, morbidly bulldozing through your self-esteem. So much individuality in the flowery speak of some folk, their mouth sui generis, perennially in bloom, pushing up from the undergrowth, mercurial quirky weeds, weedy words.
Amen.
That feed, unwittingly wit and foul, poor Mrs. Malaprop with clangers, blunders, gaps and howlers. Who cares what a noun or a consonant is? You don't need to know the difference between additives and syllables to string a sentence together. Huh? Speech will forge its path, master megalith gamuts of palaver, cloud and clear in tandem with the listening ear, the audience, you, Ustad, Tussa, Pavitzvor, Shivchigalair. The word hammers home, spirals the air, clocker and messily, alive, oh, nourishes the thought, a cog that feeds the sparks and turns the neurons, turning word salads into proper food for thought, wordy wisdom, solidarity, global in its scope, whether spoken, whispered, shouted, sung, it's ours, a new etouti noir linking us in an embrace that filters into far-flung corners of the heart when we communicate.
Next up, we'll have a Joe Collins piece.
Okay, I'm just. Yeah. I love Patting Girls' piece, so.
Oh, lovely.
I have loads of this, but I'll just pick one. God, my job is gone. When I was working, I felt good about myself. Like I'd got nothing to hide. I went out feeling nice and easy. Money in my pocket gave me pride. When I was working, I never thought that I could ever feel like this. Cut off, alone, out of touch, trapped in a useless abyss. I don't want to get up in the morning. I don't even want to go out. I feel that everyone is better than me. I know who they're talking about. Do you see him? He's out of work. He used to be great crack. Now he avoids you like he's ashamed. Now he always watches his back. When I was working, things were good at home. I brought in a steady weekly wage, kept up the mortgage, new shoes for the kids, saving for retirement and old age. Suddenly, my job was gone. The company didn't want me anymore. Sick in my stomach, washed up at 40. Dole office, staring at the floor. How can we pay? What can we do? We need money that we haven't got. We'll sell the car, cancel the phone, take out a second mortgage, and then what? I don't feel like a man anymore. I feel like a failure instead. My job gave me a sense of worth, a reason to hold up my head. I feel like I don't belong anymore. The world feels hostile and strange. I feel different to everyone else. I'm living a nightmare of change. I hate going down to collect my dole. I feel a deep sense of shame. I'm terrified I'll meet someone I know at Hatch 11 signing my name. When old friends meet me and talk about work, I mutter and mumble and bluff and make an excuse and take to my heels. I can't get away fast enough. I depended too much on the job that I had for my self-esteem and my worth. I lost sight of the fact that I'm just as good as anyone else on this earth. I'm slowly realizing that cash in the bank can never be the measure of a man. I'm looking at myself and the qualities I've got and discovering the person that I am. I'm beginning to see that to come together, first of all, I have to fall apart, and far from being finished at losing my job, I'm actually getting a new start.
Wow.
When the daybreak has settled in their creaking trees, the doors of the forest open for the flitting drift of deer among the bright croziers of new fern and the legible stars. Foxes stream from the earth. A thorny owl sweeps the long meadow. In a slink of river light, the mink's face is already slippery with yolk, and the bay's tiny islands are drops of soda under a drove moon. The sea's a heavy sleeper, breathing in and out with a catch in its breath, and it is not disturbed by that plout, the first in a play of herring, a show, silvering open the sheeted black skin of the sea. Through the starting wind, the moon skills across the sky, dragging torn shreds of clouds behind. The fox's coal is red, and ribboned in the snow's white shadow. The horses watch the sea climb and walk towards them on the hill. Hear the bull crying onto the alder, our children breathing slowly in their beds.
So, and next up, a new choir, please.
I'll just keep it really short. This is by Dorothy Parker. It's called Unfortunately for You. By the time you swear, you're his, shivering and sighing, and he vows his passion is infinite, undying. Lady, make note of this. One of you is lying.
You should watch me.
By John Cooper Clarke. For those who don't know who John Cooper Clarke is, he's widely regarded as poet laureate of the punk era. And this is a like a nightclub in the morning, you're the bitter end. Like a recently disinfected shithouse you're cleaning on the bench. You give me the horrors, too bad to be true. All my tomorrows are lousy because of you. You put the shaft in shatter, you put the pain in stain. Your drunks have spattered all about, your face is just a stain. You're certainly no raver, commonly known as a drag. Do us all a favour, wear this palsied bag. You're like a dose of scabies, I've got you under my skin. You make life a fairy tale, grin. Assume a wrestler's armpit. Have nothing on your shoes. Show me any two half-wits, they're twice as smart as you. I think about thrombosis every time we touch. You have acute halitosis to say thank you very much. You're very pleasant, and it's a fad. Your very presence makes me really mad. I hear you knock upon my door, I've got to get out of town. I hit the lights, I hit the floor, I turn the TV down. People mention murder the moment you arrive. I consider killing you if I thought you were alive. You've got the slippery quality, it makes me think of phlegm. And your dual personality, I hate both of them. Your bad breath, disease, destruction, tooth decay. Please, 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 take yourself away. Death's a birthday party, you have to spoil the fun. Like a stuffed sparrow smarter, you're no use to anyone. Like a black widow spider in the recess of the skies. Disgrace. Speaking as an outsider, what do you think of the human race? You went to a progressive psychiatrist, he recommended suicide. Before scratching your bad name off the list and pointing the way outside. Laughter from the playground breaks your bleeding heart. You're heading for a breakdown, better pull yourself apart. Your dirty name is passed about when something goes amiss. Your attitudes, gratitudes, talitudes, they made me want to piss. What sort of creature bore you? It's some kind of bat. They can't find a good word for you, but I can. Twash.
This is something that I think one of the lads should read, but I'll make the best of it. It's by Adrian Mitchell, and it's called A Copy Called Puberty, from the collection Blue Copy 1996. It was like keeping a puppy in your underpants. A secret puppy you weren't allowed to show to anyone. Not even your best friend or your worst enemy. You wanted to pat him, stroke him, cuddle him all the time, but you weren't supposed to touch him. He only slept for 5 minutes at a time. Then he'll suddenly perk up his head in the middle of school medical inspection, and always on the bus ride, so you had to climb down from the upper deck, all bent double, to smuggle the puppy off the bus, without the bus conductor fucking your wicked and tasteless stowaway. Jumping up, wet nose, eagerly wagging. He only stopped being a nuisance when you were alone together, pretending to be doing your homework, but really gazing at each other through hot and hazy daydreams with beautiful schoolgirls on the bus with kittens bouncing in their skirts.
Next up, we have Andrew from YouTube.
God, that is horrible. I have to come after those two. Here's my book, and it's called, it's an Russian contemporary poetry book, and it's absolutely fantastic. And every day gives me a gift. And this day, it gave me this gift. I thought I'd read it because I remember this week when I was 14. It's not funny at all. It's called Hanging Fire. Well, I had two, so I have another answer. I'm 14, and my skin has betrayed me. The boy I cannot live without still sucks his thumb in secret. How come my knees are always so ashy? What if I die before morning and moment in the bedroom with the door closed? I have to learn how to dance in time for the next party. My room is too small for me. Suppose I die before graduation. They will sing sad melodies, but finally tell the truth about me. There is nothing I want to do. And too much that has to be done, and Mum is in the bedroom with the door closed. Nobody even stops to think about my side of it. I should have been on the maths team. My marks were better than his. Why do I have to be the one wearing braces? I have nothing to wear tomorrow. Will I live long enough to grow up? And Mum is in the bedroom with the door closed. I forgot, that's like Audre Lorde. The other one I opened on page two was by Charles Simic, and it's classic ballroom dances. And I remember this opening, this is a great first line, it's, I don't know if it's famous, but I remember it from I don't know where. Grandmothers, who ring, okay, so classic ballroom dances. Grandmothers who ring the necks of chickens. Old nuns with names like Teresa, Marianne, who pull schoolboys by the ear. The intricate steps of pickpockets working the crowd of the curious at the scene of an accident. The slow shuffle of the evangelist with the sandwich board. The hesitation of the early morning customer peeking through the window grill of a pawn shop. The weave of a little kid who is walking to school with eyes closed. And the ancient lovers, cheek to cheek on the dance floor of the Union Hall, where they also hold charity raffles on rainy Monday nights of an eternal November.
And it's also that it's so hard to be.
By John Liddy from Limerick. It's called Scarecrow. Just imagine you're a scarecrow and talk. Mm-hmm. I've heard the egg crack in a wren's nest, the wind snap at the thistle tip of every sting. Once there were two spiders on a quilt of toasted leaves, each with its own blue spring for its own invisible web. One hunter I knew could kill a fox before his gun dog sniffed the scent. I have seen a river dog tug free from those stones born on river beds and challenge the battering course of another journey. Let's cheer the walk and tumble of a foal in her mother's blood. Course those boots that crushed the ripe stalks of my pride. I am a scarecrow nailed to old wood, eaten by worms, paralyzed by rust. This is a villanelle, and a villanelle can be very difficult to compose, I suppose. Every line has to be kind of more connected, or connected to the next line more so than any other poem. This one is called Connoisseur, or the Connoisseur by Billy Ramsey. When it came to happiness, she was a gourmet. Yeah. Connoisseur of small moments and extravagance. Like a hummingbird, free as jazz, she floated away. She wasn't immune to love, but her need to stay on top of things meant she didn't rate romance when it came to happiness. She was a gourmet of the ungraspable now, savouring on the spot without delay. But the rest of us reheat at a bitter distance, like a hummingbird, free as jazz, she floated away. I envied her, of course, which isn't to say her dance, her casual way, didn't leave me in a trance. When it came to happiness, she was a gourmet. To recognize contentment was her gift, her forte. Sipping the nectar from selected instants, like a hummingbird, free as jazz, she floated away. From me, with the old line, is there anything I can say to make this easier for you? Not a chance. When it came to happiness, she was a gourmet. Like a hummingbird, free as jazz, she floated away.
Thank you very much, and thank God. Cheers. Grand March next week. This is a poem by a woman called Katie Mackay. So I'd like you to imagine that I'm a woman in my late 20s, early 30s maybe.
Okay.
It's called Pretty.
We can imagine that.
When I was just a little girl, I asked my mother, what will I be? Will I be pretty? Will I be pretty? Will I be pretty? And the pretty question instructs from conception, passing blood and breath into cells. The word hangs from our mother's hearts in a shrill, fluorescent floodlight of worry. Will I be wanted, worthy, pretty? But puberty left me this funhouse mirror dryad, deep set at science fiction angles, crooked nose, face donkey long and pockmarked where the hormones went finger painting. My poor mother. How could this happen? You'll have porcelain skin as soon as we can see a dermatologist. You sucked your thumb, that's why your teeth look like that. You were hit in the face with a frisbee when you were six. Otherwise, your nose would have been just fine. Don't worry, we'll get it fixed, she would say, grasping my face, twisting it this way and that, like as if she was going to buy a cabbage. But this is not about her, not her fault. She, too, was raised to believe the greatest asset she could bestow upon an awkward little girl was a marketable facade. By 16, I was pickled with ointments, medications, peroxides, teeth corralled into steel prongs, laying in a hospital bed, face packed with gauze, cushioning the brand new nose the surgeon had carved. Belly gorged on 2 pints of my blood I'd swallowed under anesthesia, and every convulsive twist of my gut like my body screaming at me from the inside out, what did you let them do to you? All the while, this never-ending chorus droning on and on, like the IV needle dripping liquid beauty into my blood. Will I be pretty? Will I be pretty? Like my mother unwrapping the gift wrap to reveal the bouquet of daughter her $10,000 bought her. Pretty, pretty. And now I have not seen my own face for 10 years. Mm. I have not seen my own face in 10 years, but this is not about me. This is about the self-mutilating circus we've painted ourselves clowns in,
about women who will prowl 30 stalls in 6 malls to find the right cocktail dress, but haven't a clue where to find fulfillment or how to wear joy, wandering through life shackled to a shopping bag beneath those 2 pretty syllables. About men wallowing on bar stools, drearily practicing attraction, and everyone who will drift home tonight, crestfallen because not enough strangers found you suitably fuckable. This is about my own someday daughter. When you approach me, already stung, stained with insecurity, begging, "Mom, will I be pretty? Will I be pretty?" I will wipe that question from your mouth like cheap lipstick and answer, "No." The word pretty is unworthy of everything you will be. And no child of mine will be contained in 5 letters. You will be pretty intelligent, pretty creative, pretty amazing, but you will never be merely pretty.
That sounds great. Thanks for that. There's a couple people left, but just keep very, very, very short, right?
Yeah, like 10 minutes for 5 people there.
So, like, what about is it? Or the next episode? Yeah,
like 2 minutes max, sorry, yeah. For the last 5 people.
So, Michael Ray, please.
Okay, this is by Charles Bukowski. To the whore who took my poems. Some say we should keep personal remorse from the poem, stay abstract. And there is some reason in this. But Jesus, 12 poems gone, and I don't keep carbons, and you have my paintings too, my best ones. It's stifling. Are you trying to crush me out like the rest of them? Why didn't you take my money? They usually do. From the sleeping, drunken pants, sick in the corner. Next time, take my left arm, or a 50, but not my poems. I'm not Shakespeare, but sometime, simply, there won't be any more, abstract or otherwise. There'll always be money, and whores, and drunkards, down to the last bomb. But as God said, crossing his legs, I see where I have made plenty of poets, but not so very much poetry.
Next up, we'll have Grant, the symphony poem, the hipster Tiger Woods, version.
I can't even remember why we came up with the symphony. So Rosie taught me playing guitar and singing, so... She told me I had to play.
You have 2 minutes?
Oh, geez. So there you go. And my favorite poet is the guy who wrote this song, and it's about a 3-minute song.
What a beautiful face I have found in this place that is certainly all around the sun. What a beautiful dream that could flash on the screen in a blink of an eye. Gone from me, soft and sweet, let me hold it close and keep it here with me. And one day we will die, and our ashes will fly from the aeroplane over sea. But for now we are young, let us lay in the sun. Count every beautiful thing we can see. Love to be in the arms of all that I'm keeping here with me. What a curious life we have found here tonight. There is music down from the stream. There are lights in the clouds. That is ghosts all around. Hear a voice as it's rolling and ringing through me. Soft and sweet, how the notes all bend and reach above the
Mihal Roche.
This one is from a book called Beachcombers that I picked up about 2 hours ago. There was two poems really, but I go with one tonight. It's called Men and Newer, and it was written at the Kid of Fields, not Mayo, in 1994.
Is it
Niall Harris, is it? Yeah. Yeah, it's a band. Okay. The more we free ourselves of money grub mentality, the sooner we begin to build our sane reality. Men and means work together, tread lightly on the earth. A lesson from the Cater folk for the millennium's birth. It's about fun and abundance, a sense of community, a step in the direction of underlying unity. The key to the metal is light-hearted humility, a sense of liberation from grasping incivility. It's a timely alternative to heartless individuality, leading down the road to chaotic finality. The spirit of the metal echoes words up the stages and still sends message down to the ages.
Good job. So there's two people left now. So first we'll have Seamus Harrington.
Thanks, Billy. This is by Robin Roberts. Wedding the locksmith's daughter. The slow grains slide to embed the blade of the key as a sheeting, a gliding on graphite, pushing inside to find the ribs of the lock. Sunk home, the true key slots to its matrix, geared, tight fitting, they turn together, shooting the spring lock, throwing the bolt, dactyls, iambics, the clinch of words, the hidden couplings in the cased machine. A chime of sound on sound, the way the sung notes nibs on meaning and holds. The lines engage and marry now. Their bells are keeping time. The church doors close and open underground.
And finally, Rob.
Yeah, I come with Edward Cart.
I try and fit in two really quick poems and small bits, but excuse me.
Go on, Rob.
If you know the point of balance, you can settle the details. If you can settle the details, you can stop running around. Once you can stop running around, your mind will become calm. Once your mind becomes calm, you can think in front of a tiger. Once you can think in front of a tiger, you will surely succeed. And that was by a guy called Mencius, who inherited the kind of like the kind of chalice from Confucius 2,000 years ago in China. And I'll do one by Rabbi Burns, if I'm allowed. My father was a farmer from up on the Carrick border, and carefully he raised me in dignity and order. He bade me act a manly part, though I never had a farthing. For without an honest manly heart, no man was worth regarding. So out into the world, my course I did determine, though to be rich was not my pitch, to be great was charming. My talents, they were not the worst, nor yet my education. Resolved was I, at least to try to end, to mend my situation. Through many a way and vain assay, I courted fortune's favour. Some cause unseen still stepped between to frustrate each endeavour. Sometimes by foes I was overpowered, sometimes by friends forsaken. And when my hope was at the top, I sure was worse mistaken. And then sore harassed and tired at last, with fortune's vain delusion, I dropped my schemes like idle dreams, and I came to this conclusion. The past is dead, the future's hid. It's good or ill untried, but the present hour is in my power, and so I will enjoy it. You are.
Handcraft, that was a great end of the night.